Hi, and welcome to an Apes vs. podcast. Today, our fight is apes versus Fritz Haber, the inventor of synthetic fertilizer and winner of the Chemistry Nobel Prize for his scientific discoveries. We're Bella,
Abby,
and Emily.
Thank you so much for listening. Let's get into it. So, to start off, let's talk a little bit about how Haber was able to make his discovery. First off, the reason for the discovery is that before synthetic fertilizers were invented, it was really difficult to get fertilizers. The only fertilizers on the market were natural, such as Chilean guano, aka a specific nutrient-filled type of bird or bat poop found in a certain part of Chile. A big problem with this was that these fertilizers were a limited resource, making them both expensive and at risk of running out. Several chemists, including Haber, decided to tackle this problem. One big issue was that nitrogen was a necessary component of the fertilizer. This was difficult to get because, as Claudia Flavel Weil explains in The Chemical Engineer, nitrogen's triple bonds make the nitrogen molecule incredibly stable and therefore hard to fix. When trying to experiment, Haber first tried to use eclectic discharges, and while it produced some results, the yield was so low and the process so difficult that it was dropped. The second approach was high-temperature synthesis. This had slightly better outcomes, but the equipment necessary to make it was scarce, and it was also difficult to do properly, with several explosions happening during testing. The final method used was high-pressure use. Britannica describes how this process works like this. It directly combines nitrogen from the air with hydrogen under extremely high pressures and moderately high temperatures. A catalyst made mostly from iron enables the reaction to be carried out at a lower temperature than would otherwise be practicable, while the removal of ammonia from the batch as soon as it is formed ensures that an equilibrium favoring product formation is maintained. This process of creating synthetic fertilizers is known as the Haber-Bosch process and is still used today. This is the discovery that won Haber the Nobel Prize in Chemistry, as it helped to prevent famine. Alright, now that we've talked about how the synthetic fertilizer was created, let's discuss how it works. Emily, do you have some information on this topic to share with us?
Why, yes I do, Bella. So, the Haber-Bosch process to create ammonia works by pumping nitrogen and hydrogen through a series of chambers. The gases are used in a 1-to-3 ratio, with 1 volume of nitrogen for every 3 volumes of hydrogen. The nitrogen used in the process is from the air around us, while the hydrogen is from natural gases. The first chamber is a high-pressure compressor. This compressor pressurizes the gases to 200 atmospheres. The second chamber heats up the gases and pumps them past iron catalyst beds. The gases are heated to somewhere between 400 and 450 degrees Celsius. A higher temperature than this would increase the speed of the reaction further, but would cause less of the substances pumped into the chamber to react with one another. Conversely, lower temperatures than this would cause the reaction to happen much slower, but would produce much more reacted product than the higher temperatures. During Haber's time, the beds were made of pure iron. Currently, most manufacturers use beds made of iron and potassium hydroxide. These beds in both cases speed up the reaction between hydrogen and nitrogen and make the process a more efficient one. Once the nitrogen and hydrogen have been pushed through these two chambers, the product is a mix of nitrogen, hydrogen, and reacted nitrogen and hydrogen. The reacted gases create ammonia, or NH3. This mix of solitary nitrogen, solitary hydrogen, and ammonia is pumped into a cooling tank wherein the ammonia liquefies and separates from the other two substances. Once the substances have been separated, the leftover nitrogen and hydrogen are pumped back up to the space between the compressor and the heating chamber in order to be recycled. This process only creates ammonia from about 15% of the original matter. Because of this, it is very necessary to continue to cycle the leftover hydrogen and nitrogen that were not reacted during the process. Throughout this method, even at only 15% reaction levels, the process has about a 98% reaction rate, meaning that at the end of the day, 98% of the hydrogen and nitrogen originally pumped into the contraption will continue to react together to create ammonia. This is a process that many scientists are still working on improving. If you just look up the Haber-Bosch process on Google Scholar, you'll see many, many articles and papers from very recent years talking about attempts to create a version of this process where less heat or less pressure is needed in order to create a more sustainable and/or cheaper version of the process.
Thanks so much for sharing that with us, Emeline. Now I'm going to talk about the impact that the invention of synthetic fertilizer had on farming and the environment. Obviously, synthetic fertilizers were very important at the time for farming, as they allowed people to farm more cheaply. This led to a growth in world population. As the BBC reports, without the invention of synthetic fertilizer, the Earth would only be able to support 4 billion people. As the current population begins to surpass 7.5 billion people, it is important to note this population spike and growth wouldn't be possible if not for the amount of food that was able to be produced using synthetic fertilizers. However, there were some interesting drawbacks to this development environmentally. The main drawback is the way that synthetic fertilizers leach nutrients from the soil. According to Jerry Gatch in his article Synthetic versus Organic Fertilizers, published in EnviroIngenuity, most chemical fertilizers do not contain micronutrients, support microbiological life in the soil, and can create toxic concentrations of salt in the soil. This is an important thing for farmers to consider when considering using synthetic fertilizers, as they might not be the best option for sustainable farming that is good for the environment.
As you can see, Fritz Haber's Haber-Bosch method had a huge positive impact on the world and society. It created an environment where the human race could grow to what it is today. However, no one can talk about Fritz Haber without talking about the complicated entirety of his legacy. Haber, in addition to the creation of the Haber-Bosch method, also created some of the most horrific biotechnologies in the world. When Germany entered World War I, it had a limited supply of bullets. Their stockpiles would only allow them to last for about 6 months within the war. Germany had the manufacturing capability to create more shells, but without access to Britain's trade routes, didn't have the ability to get more gunpowder in order to make bullets. And obviously, their access to Britain's trade routes would shut off as soon as they entered a war with them. So, it was incredibly important to Germany that they create some other way to either make bullets or fight without. Haber, a well-respected member of the German government at this point due to his creation of the Haber-Bosch method, was the solution. The German government heavily invested in Haber and his team. Using this money, Haber went on to make chlorine gas, the first chemical weapon made expressly for the purpose of serving as a chemical weapon. The creation of chlorine gas allowed Germany to stay in World War I for the next 3 years. During this time, Haber also created mustard gas, another incredibly harmful chemical weapon. During World War I, about 1.3 million casualties occurred because of gas attacks, with around 90,000 of them leading to fatalities. This is not even counting the argument that Haber's creation of chlorine and mustard gas and the subsequent extension of the war is what allowed World War II to happen at all. Despite how terrible these numbers are, Haber's most horrific invention was not one originally created for the purpose of human harm. Before World War I, Fritz Haber had created a gas called Zyklon B. Zyklon B was originally created to kill lice and for general fumigation. However, when the Nazi government took control of Germany after World War I and began the Holocaust, Zyklon B was the main chemical used in gas chambers. Jewish fatalities during the Holocaust were not tracked nearly as precisely as soldier casualties from gas, but it is estimated that at the peak of the arrest, 1943 to 1944, an average of 6,000 Jews were gassed every day at Auschwitz alone. Haber himself was Jewish and had fled Germany when the Nazis took power with the help of Albert Einstein, a close personal friend. Additionally, it must be noted that the creation of these gases is not a horror that can be excused by saying that Haber was simply a product of his time and circumstance. Haber's wife, Clara Immerwahr, a renowned chemist in her own right and the first woman to graduate with a STEM doctorate from a German university, committed suicide after Haber created chlorine gas, at the very least in part because of her horror at her husband's choices. The juxtaposition between Haber's creation of the Haber-Bosch process and its effect on the Earth's ability to support humanity, as well as his creation of some of the most harmful inventions in history, showcases how complicated Fritz Haber's legacy is. To show some perspective on how far we've come and what we've used fertilizer as over the years is Abby.
Farmers have been using fertilizer on their crops for thousands of years. Originally have thought to have dated back 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, Amy Bogard and Archaeobotanist at Oxford University and her team believe that the practice dates back to almost 8,000 years ago. Amy and her team collected and analyzed over 2,500 ancient crop samples, including wheat, barley, peas, and lentils, from 13 early farming sites across Europe, dating from 4,400 to 7,900 years ago. They saw that the plants had higher levels of nitrogen-15 and concluded that it was caused by fertilizer, specifically manure. Farmers used manure as fertilizer because they generally had small plots of land and would have noticed that the crops closest to the animals were doing better than those further away and would start using manure across all their crops, improving them all. Manure has a rare nitrogen-15 isotope that is an essential plant nutrient and would support healthy plant growth. Manure was a dominant source of fertilizer for many years, with documentation of the Babylonians, Egyptians, Romans, and early Germans all using it to increase yields on their farm. There was a shift in the agriculture world in the 18th century when bones were being used as fertilizer. By 1850, England was importing so many bones that the rest of Europe was complaining how there was none left for them to use. In the U.S., bison bones were used and helped save early Nebraskan homesteaders from going bankrupt. Bones were a popular fertilizer because they are rich in phosphorus and calcium, which help support and promote growth of plants. Despite fertilizer being used to help crops, very little was known about the science behind them and why they worked the way they did. This was until the 19th century when we were ushered into the modern era of soil chemistry and plant nutrients. There were many innovative scientists during this time period, with the most prominent being Justus von Liebig, nicknamed Father of the Fertilizer Industry. He gained this title by developing the first nitrogen-based fertilizer. He also came up with Liebig's theory of mineral nutrients, which was the foundation of agricultural chemistry, by determining that nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium are essential to plant growth, and the Liebig's law of minimum, which states that the maximum plant growth is determined by least available nutrients and not total available nutrients. In his research, he concluded that plants' nutrients can be depleted by crop removal and added fertilizer is needed from optimum crop production, leading to the development of his fertilizer. Other notable scientists that have followed in his footsteps are William Ostwald with the Ostwald process, a chemical process used to make nitrogen acid, providing the main raw material for the most common type of fertilizer production, Carlos Bosch and Fritz Haber with the Haber process. There was another shift in the agricultural world in the middle of the 20th century, World War II, and chemical fertilizer. Chemical fertilizer was limited because of its many obstacles, including artificial fertilizer being too expensive due to limited availability, mechanized methods of application needed to be developed, and general knowledge on how to use it was unknown. Instead, manure and plowdown legume were the primary source of fertilizer, with small amounts of blood meal and bone meal also being used. This all changes in World War II when there's an increase in nitrogen production for explosives. To keep up with the demand, the U.S. government constructed 10 new plants to produce ammonium, NH3, all new natural gas lines so that they can use gas as raw material for nitrogen production. These plants were producing 730,000 tons of ammonium each year, with a capacity to produce 1.6 million tons of ammonium a year. After the war, the need for supplies was replaced by food supply restriction in Europe and the U.S., To accomplish this, new advances were made, including the development of new and improved hybrids, the development of basic guidelines for crop nutrition and fertilizer requirements, a revolution in equipment design and performance, a large-scale production of phosphate by acidulating rock phosphate, and the discovery of massive deposits of potash around the world. This modern age of fertilizer is marked by massive funding and research efforts by groups like the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the University of Nebraska, and the TVA to accomplish the primary goal of developing comprehensive guidelines and information for the most efficient and effective use of fertilizer under differing production and environmental conditions. The last 30 years or so are called the technological age. It is marked by increased knowledge of the complex interaction involving the use of fertilizer, chemical, physical, and biological factors of soil, and potential effects of fertilizer use on climate and the environment. This increase in knowledge has led to precision and best management farming practices, which have resulted in the ability to apply various fertilizer types to a given crop in site-specific amounts. It has also led to many technological advances in a multitude of fields, including crop genetics and breeding, plant and soil testing, and the development of techniques to monitor the movement of nutrients and water within the soil profile. Within the modern age, over the last 75 years, chemical fertilizer has bypassed manure. In the mid to late 1940s, 2 million tons of chemical fertilizer were used per year. In 1960, over 7 million tons of chemical fertilizer were used per year. And in 2014, over 20 million tons of chemical fertilizer was used per year. The downsides of chemical fertilizer is as it grew in popularity, so did large corporate firms, reducing small family farms. Reports of its usage varies from state to state, and there is a question on how accurate these reports are, and it negatively impacts the environment, especially aquatic ecosystems with excess runoff. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time at Apes Versus. Who will we find next?